I would like to invite each of you to listen carefully to God's voice in your heart. Listen to His voice. Do not be afraid. Do not be afraid.
Hello and welcome. I'm Father Chad Arnold, and you are listening to About 4 O'Clock, a podcast on vocations and discernment. Shooting the theological breeze with me this morning in the always accommodating St. Rose Philippine Duchesne studio is Father Garrett Burns.
What's up?
And Father Drew Hoffman.
You sucked up with the St. Lawrence stuff last time and you thought you had tricked me, but I'm still mad about that.
You know, quiz for you. Why might we name the studio after St. Rose Philippine Duchesne?
She was in Kansas for a while.
That's right. Lived in Kansas. So, see, it's still a celebration of Kansas in a way, okay. And our victory over that. She was on the, I think, Pottawatomie Reservation for about a year.
And what's that spring? What's the name of that town? Spring Creek, Spring
something
Hill.
Like something like that. Spring. Spring Hill sounds right.
Sometime down in Sugar Creek.
There we go.
There That's we got it. There. That's
nice.
Look at us.
Nice. Man, how just call it a day. That is as good as it's going to get.
God is so good. How many saints have been in Kansas?
Canonized saints?
Yeah.
She might be the only.
Would Mother Teresa? I'm sure Mother Teresa drove through at some point.
I don't think Mother Teresa did a lot of driving.
Oh,
I
really?
Don't think she just.
I think she did. I think she was in. I've heard some stories about her going to some McDonald's in California while she's driving. And yeah, there's a story about Mother Teresa that I'll preach about fairly regularly, that a sister that came and spoke at conception one time told the story. So maybe it's not true that they were in at McDonald's. And they were about to go in because they were driving through California. And a girl comes out. She's got this beautiful dress on and a big ice cream cone. And the dad is, it's like maybe a 5-6-year-old girl. The dad is very clearly like, you're going to spill this. Let me hold this. Let me help you. You were going to spill this. She's got a beautiful dress. And she spills it right all over her dress and starts to cry. And the dad is not frustrated at all. He immediately starts to clean up the ice cream cone. And she goes, that is how God is with mother.
Hmm.
I don't know if that's a true story, but I preach about it a lot. So let's talk
that's
about
good.
It.
Is. That's good.
So she drove. She probably drove through Kansas. She took 70.
Let's assume so.
I don't know that there would be any others.
Yeah.
I don't know if Drexel came through. JP2, I don't think ever came through.
Yeah. I would like to see the canonization of Pierre de Smit, and he would have passed through.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
If you don't know your Catholic American history, Father Pierre de Smit, he was a Jesuit who basically mapped the Western United States as part of his evangelization to the Native Americans. And him and St. Rose Philippine Duchesne were buddies.
Oh, I didn't know that.
They were really good friends. Anytime he'd come back to St. Louis, because that's where she was predominantly stationed, he'd stop and visit her and tell her about his missions out to these uncharted areas. And there's a really cool story between the two of them. I read it in one of his biographies years ago. One of his last missions when he was going out to Western United States, there was always the chance he might die because, you know, he was going into places that no European had ever been at that time. And so there was always the chance that he might die. St. Rose Philippine Duchesne was getting up there in age, and so there was always a chance she might die. And so they made a pact with each other that if they died and went to heaven, they had a sign they were going to ask God to let them reveal to the other person, no matter where they were, that they were dead and that they had entered into their eternal reward. So St. Rose Philippine Duchesne died first, and Father Pierre de Smit was on a mission out in, you know, the Northwest Territories, and he comes back, and one of the Jesuit priests come to him, I'm sorry to tell you, Sister Rose passed away while you were gone. He just smiles like, oh no, I already knew. He wouldn't say what the sign was, but he was confident. He said that he had received the sign that she had entered into her eternal reward. So he wasn't sad. He just knew that she had passed in her time.
What do you want our signs to be?
Like a KU national championship.
If WSU beats KU.
There we go.
And the score is, yeah.
I'll know Gare has
if
passed
it's, if it's
reward.
A three-pointer at the buzzer, then anything less, then keep praying for me. So until that happens, keep praying for my soul. But yeah, St. Rose Philippine Duchesne, she loved to hear about Father Pierre de Smit's sacramental moments. You can imagine the masses he would do among the Native Americans, the baptisms that he had, and he sure loved to tell about them. And though our experiences are different, I also like to tell of my favorite sacramental moments because there are just some really cool moments. first confessions are always kind of adorable. Like, I remember this little boy going behind the screen, going to first confession. He finishes up. He gets up, walks around to give me a hug. I'm like, I'm not sure if you quite understand the purpose of the screen, but I'm super happy for you. And you have those just wonderful moments. I don't know what have been some good moments for you guys in the sacraments.
My thoughts go immediately to a few RCIA people just really getting to know their stories and their history and everything they've been through, and just those days of joy of being able to give them the sacraments. Especially one just this past year, was a young woman in her 20s and met Father Ben Green when she was in the hospital. She actually went blind. And through just
from Father Ben Green?
From just seeing his face.
He's rough.
But through that interaction, she decided she wanted to enter the church. She'd been baptized, you know, in a non-Catholic Christian church, but I had to go just to her house because she couldn't really just come to a normal RCIA, and just getting to know her. And one, getting to walk through the Gospels with her as a person who really hadn't read the Gospels much.
And, well, that would be cool.
And she was a little rough around the edges, or just, I don't know. And I just remember one quote, you know, we just went through part of the Gospel and she goes, man, this Jesus guy is a savage. And I'm like, like, you're right. Yeah. I mean, no one had ever said that to me, but that was just her way of expressing, like, this guy, you know, is unlike anybody I've ever heard of, you know? And so just to get to give really her the sacraments is, that's a beautiful day when you see that culminate and they receive grace and they receive the Eucharist. So, yeah.
At St. Isidore's particularly, tons of marriage preps and couples coming in, young couples particularly. And on several occasions, I had the opportunity to confirm or bring a person into the church at their wedding.
Oh, wow.
And so because of the way the timings worked out and things like that, it made sense to do them at the same time.
That's cool. I don't think I've ever done that.
And so twice. And once they were just getting confirmed, they were already Catholic. Once they were becoming Catholic at the wedding. And both times it was a guy. And so they would come up before the wedding ceremony, I mean, before, after the homily, but before the vows. And they'd come up and the guy would took a step up. The girl took kind of a step back. And then she puts her hand on his shoulder as her as the confirmation sponsor for him. Very cool energy and a really cool, like, beautiful moment that what they're supporting in this marriage, there's a romantic element, there's a spiritual element. They're both going to have to be each other's sponsors in a certain sense, living out this faith. And so that's one of my faith. Because you have all, you have, I mean, they've gone to confession beforehand. Obviously, you have the sacrament of matrimony, you have First Communion, you have confirmation. You've just got a lot going on in that moment.
That is super cool. By the time this airs, we'll be past Easter. But right now, as we record this, Easter is coming up. And I love the Triduum. Just love the liturgy of the Triduum. That's one of the things I kind of miss as vocation director, is I don't get to preside at that as I did as a pastor. I remember one of my first Easter, I think it was, as pastor in Coffeyville. You know, I'm just, the music's going and I am just taken with the Spirit. It's been a great Lent. It's been a good, you know, Holy Thursday, Good Friday. We're at the Easter Vigil. We're just flying there. And we get done with the first reading and there's a prayer after each. There's the reading, the psalm, and the prayer. And I am just so in the moment. I start chanting the prayer. Anyone that knows me, I cannot sing. I do not know how to sing. I don't know how to chant. It was just, I was so overcome with emotion and overjoyed. I'm like, I'm singing and I don't. And I remember the thought going through my head. I'm like, oh no, there's six more of these and I've got to do this and I have no idea how this is going to fly. I felt like I just put behind the an airplane and just like, all right, take care of it. I'm like, I don't know what I'm doing. But it was just, it started in a very genuine place because I was just like a little kid. I was taken with the liturgy and just.
To say these words is not enough.
It wasn't enough. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It wasn't enough. But I think my favorite sacramental and Easter moment, I was doing hospital rounds, just visiting some people in the hospital, and there was an older gentleman there, and we just got to be talking for a while. He'd been away from the church for quite a while, and as we kind of talked, we realized, well, you know, we can solve the issue that was at hand at this stage in life with confession. So we were talking for a while, and I said, well, do you want to do that? And he said, he starts getting a little teary-eyed, and yes, I would love that opportunity. He didn't realize that the issue could be solved. Mm-hmm. And we were able to work through it. He was an older gentleman. He'd worked in a career that had just kind of shattered his body. He was pretty beat up. So he was already old. He looked older than he was. And so we're getting ready for a confession. He starts getting out of the hospital bed. I'm like, no, you don't do that. It's fine. You're, you know, it's been decades since he's been there. So I'm just thinking he's going back to, well, this is how we do it. And he stops and he says, Father, I haven't done this in however many decades. I'm going to do this right. So he climbed out of his hospital bed to get down on the linoleum on his knees to make a confession. And it was very heartfelt. It was very beautiful. I was moved in the sacrament. We get through it. I help him back into the hospital bed. And I said, you can receive communion now. Do you want me to bring you communion tomorrow? And he says, Father, it's been so long. I want to spend a little bit more time preparing my heart. It was Lent. He said, I'm going to get out of this hospital and I'll be at the Easter Vigil. And that's when I want to receive communion again. And that's exactly what he did. He got out of the hospital. And I remember him coming up in the communion line at the Easter Vigil, just crying, just weeping at the joy of being able to receive that. And I start getting misty-eyed too. But again, that his witness of recognizing the importance and his hunger for forgiveness in the sacrament of confession and realizing this wasn't an everyday occurrence and then preparing for Easter Vigil and then faithful ever after. But it was just a beautiful moment, both in the hospital there and at the communion, the vigil. It's a wonderful memory for me and just a wonderful sacramental moment.
Gary and I, as hospital chaplains for a time, we were hospital chaplains at Wesley while we were priests at the cathedral. So you just have so many of those. Like, we could go through 100 of those on both ends of the spectrum. The horrific moments that we were a part of, that we were, in retrospect, it's a blessing that we were a part of those, but they were my second day at the cathedral, I get called to the hospital and a man has attempted suicide. And he is physically terrible. I mean, he's all bandaged up. You can't really even look at him. And his girlfriend comes in and she says, he's not going to make it through the night. She says, we went to Mass this weekend and he was not baptized. And he leaves Mass and he says, I would love to get baptized and become a Catholic. And so she started talking, told some stories about how he's been going to Mass actually fairly regularly, but never had gotten baptized and always said that he wanted to and always said that we wanted to. So I talked to the people and we baptized him and confirmed him in that moment. He died that night, but that was a intense, because that was his kind of, he had expressed enough of a wish that that was a thing we were comfortable doing. And then some other just brutally hard moments. But then on the other end of the spectrum, being able to be in hospital rooms with the elderly as they're passing away and with their families never forget that. Still to this day, Father, you don't remember me. You were in the hospital room when my grandpa died. I will always, 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 always remember that. Is a really cool part of the priesthood.
And to be able to witness, be an eyewitness in the front row of a happy death, like St. Joseph, is a pretty powerful thing. Yeah, I mean, we are not assured of anyone's salvation, but we have faith in the sacraments. So if you knew this person, they're a good person, they received the sacrament, just to know that, yeah, a great gift that's been entrusted to us as priests. And whenever the people like reveal that to me anew and they have that faith in it and almost call me out of that. Because we also did 1,000 anointings where no one was there and you're not even really sure the person has a ton of faith. But then when that person comes and desires confession or the Eucharist or anointing with that level of intensity and faith that really they should have always, it just calls that response for me as well.
I had one experience. I don't know. I might cut this out. Because it sounds like it has to do with me and it doesn't.
Tell the story.
I was a young priest and it was just my day off and the day had kind of got away from me. So I was going to go say Mass in the evening. So I go over to the church. I don't know, it's 9:30 at night. Flip on the light to start setting up the altar. And there's two people in the very back of the church. And I don't know them all. I've never seen them before. And so I just kind of say from the sanctuary, just so you know, I'm going to be saying Mass here. You're welcome to stay for it. You're welcome to participate in it, or you're welcome just to keep praying. Either way won't bother me. Went about my Mass, looked up, see if they were coming for communion. They didn't come from communion, so I didn't think any of it. Just figured they were there praying. Finish up Mass, wish them good night, turn off the light, and leave. Nothing out of the ordinary for me. They came to me months later and told me that they were hard on their luck. They were actually homeless at that time. And they were planning on going to commit suicide that night. And so that was their last stop before they went to go. And as they would describe it, we were going to do it Romeo and Juliet style. Father, we were going to kill each other. And that was the end of it. And they'd stopped at the church to make their peace with God right before they were going to do this unfortunate act. And they said during the Mass, they began to see just rays of light emit from the altar that they both saw it. Like they started talking to each other and that was what convinced them that that they could not go through with the, what they had been planning. And so I didn't, you know, again, it was just an ordinary, I was just doing a regular day off mm-hmm. mass. It wasn't anything, I mean, the mass is always something special, yep. but it wasn't anything outside of that. And they told me, and it's, I still run into them every once in a while when I'm back in Pittsburgh, you know, they still have a struggle in their life. And so they're still figuring things out, but I just get the biggest hugs from them. I'll be like walking for coffee and they'll be walking down the street and just run over to see me. And
wow.
it was, yeah, just a wonderful moment that the Lord was using the sacrament to reveal a much more profound truth that this couple very much needed at that moment there.
And a great witness to that was not you. Like probably in that moment, you were like, man, I probably should have said mass earlier in the day.
Like, exactly. That was exactly
I'm
the
kind of a lazy
going.
Priest, but right. I guess I'll just yeah. go do this right. and get it over with or whatever. And of course the Lord's hand was in that because mm-hmm. you needed to be there at that moment.
Yeah. It's humbling that the Lord can, yeah. As you're saying, just, we don't even know sometimes the way he's working through us and helping others. And that's to say nothing of the numerous moments that happen within our interior, you know, during the sacraments. I can't many times been saying mass or hearing confession where interiorly I'm just deeply moved by something. The person's not even aware of what's going on there, but that the Lord has taken that moment or that phrase that I have said 1,000 times before and just made it new to me. And there's this moment of the heart where it's just, oh, wow. Oh, wow. And you want to pause, you can't because you're doing public ministry, but I'm like, if I were alone, I would just stop right here and linger with the Lord for a few moments, but you're not always able to do that. But those things often very important are taking place, the silence of our hearts. And it's often in that silence that God tends to speak to us rather than in loud and blaring ways, which is why for people who are discerning, silence is so important. And we live in a world that doesn't readily allow for silence. You could go through your entire day. I mean, people fall asleep with the TV on or the radio on because they don't want silence. You can make it through your whole day without silence, but that would be hugely detrimental, well, to your relationship with God, but specifically to discerning. There is a need for silence in our lives and especially in discernment.
And it has to be intentional. And we talked last episode about intentionality and intimacy. So intentionality and silence is even more so. If I'm expecting silence to come to me, if I'm expecting silence to just be a part of my day, as Chad's talking about, it will not. So I have to be intentional and I have to guard and defend my silence. And whatever that looks like, Father Pat York talks about turning the car into the rolling monastery. Okay, music in the car, podcast in the car, whatever the case. Maybe that's how I protect my silence. But I've got to be intentional about the silence in my life. It will not just naturally occur.
Yeah, just because it goes well with what we were talking about in the last episode and that Blaise Pascal quote, right? That all of man's problems go back to the fact that he can't sit quietly alone in his room for, I forget if he says an hour or whatever. Just that is so key to develop. Yeah, a discerning heart means a listening, a receptive heart. If there is zero time to listen, then you can't discern.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, throwing back to the last episode, that was one of the great things of being a distance from Wichita is I'd do that 2.5 hour drive in silence. And it was a great time because when you're in the parish office, when that there's always people around. And so when I was going to my priest group or when I was going into town to see some friends, to turn that radio off and just have that prolonged bit of silence. Obviously, there was silence in the holy hour. But there's something else about that prolonged outside of prayer where it's a more casual conversation with the Lord in a lot of ways.
And just things will pop up in silence that don't pop up any other time. That's why there's that, you know, even in the secular world that our best ideas come in the shower.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But it's the same notion that I need to give my brain, even from, again, a secular standpoint, I need to give my brain room to breathe and be creative. And then allow other things to occur. So that's true in a non-religious sense for a business person or thing or something like that. So of course it's true in the spiritual realm that I need to give the Lord a chance, some space, and not holding on to so many of these things. And he doesn't have any room to do something new. If without silence, even if I'm praying a lot, without silence, I'm dictating the terms of this relationship. And silence gives the Lord control over this relationship.
That's a good way to put it. Yeah, I like that.
Yeah, it's one of the reasons I heard recently, it was from one of those surveys they give to seminarians or to recently ordained priests, and you know, they just describe their experience and how they came to make that decision. And I think it was 9 out of 10 basically say that adoration was mm-hmm. a key factor in their discernment. Because, yeah, obviously, everybody's story is so different. But, yeah, I have never heard a priest tell his vocation story, and Eucharistic adoration was Amen. Nowhere mm-hmm. to be a part of that. And why is that? Because 95% of the time, that's just alone in silence and developing all of this stuff we're talking about that fights against so many of the fears and the obstacles that we've talked about in previous episodes when you have that spirit you're talking about of receptivity and docility. Because I've made an intentional decision and go and be in silence means I'm ready for to be out of control and to allow you to be in control.
Mm-hmm. And I think because it is so contrary to where our world lives and we live in a noisy world, you've got to build up in that silence. We talk about our holy hours. We talk about these long drives. I don't know if I was ready for that when I was 18, 19, sure. 20. You know, you start with those 10-minute visits to adoration or a 15-minute visit to the chapel, and maybe once in a while a holy hour if you feel comfortable with it, but you got to ideally work up to be comfortable with that silence with the Lord.
And so that's something that, can I name something just real practical, real small? Okay, if I'm a young man discerning, I don't have to do a silent holy hour, you're not going to make it. And so can I name the 10 minutes I don't have a plan? Mm-hmm. 15 minutes, this car ride between Bishop Carroll and home or something like that. Don't make the perfect the enemy of the good. Something real small, real practical, I can name, I can write down to insert some silence into my day.
Yeah. It's better to look forward to 10 minutes of prayer than to dread an hour of prayer. Because if you dread that hour, it's not going to last. But if you look forward to that 10 minutes, it's going to grow to 15 minutes. It's going to grow to 20 minutes. It's going to keep growing in that way. And that's where we need to work.
And we were just talking before we started recording about St. Thomas Aquinas mm-hmm. and how Thomas would walk around the interior courtyard at his monastery when he was trying to think through something. That even, you know, I think that could be a helpful thing. And I've heard you talk about when you're working on homilies, if you can see you pacing.
Oh yeah. I sometimes have to move to think.
I told my director of hospitality, he saw me pacing the church my first weekend. And he wanted to make sure everything was okay. I was like, no, you're going to see this a lot. You're going to see this. Yeah. You're going to see this often. So I think even some of that can be a walk without my music. I live mm-hmm. on a college campus. Everybody's got their headphones. Too much is made of that everyone's got their headphones in. That isn't really the case. But a lot of people, hey, I'm walking between classes. I'm going to put headphones in and go from space to space. Even that little, hey, I'm walking from a place to place. I got nothing, mm-hmm. nothing except allowing some thoughts to roll and to tumble.
Yeah. And it is pretty countercultural. I'd be interested what exactly you mean by that too much is made of that, because I don't know, that is my experience. If you're not intentional with it, you won't really have silence. You can be pretty filled with, if it's images or sounds, that you just get overloaded sensory-wise.
Well, what I mean is that people assume college campuses are just a bunch of people with their headphones in walking past each other, and that's not really the case. Yeah. There are plenty of people who are talking and things like that. That's a
dramatization.
Attaboy. It's like when peculiarly comes on.
Right. There's those certain words like I will never pronounce this the rest of my life correctly.
You're it's exactly right. Yeah. You're exactly right though that it's got to be protected and guarded, and you have to name something that you're doing to allow for it.
Yeah. And sometimes don't be afraid in that silence. Okay. Let's own it. Yes. Especially when you're being, that can become boring. Hey, even when you've done it for a while, sometimes that can feel boring, or your mind can be, and there's the temptation to fill it with something else. It's okay. Be bored. Someone, I don't remember who it was, described prayer as being willing to waste time with God. And because in the moment, that's how the evil one's going to whisper. I'm like, there's so much work I could be doing. Why am I just sitting here? Why am I just walking? Why am I being silent? I could be making a phone call. No. Step back. That's all right. Waste time with the Lord.
And you're united with so many people in that moment when you enter into that silence and prayer. I once had a spiritual director encourage me to do that, just to offer in every holy hour 2 minutes of silence for every just dry heart out there that is seeking the Lord and wanting that, but just not feeling it. Because honestly, so many times it'll still happen today where I'm doing a holy hour and I look at my phone and it's like, I've been there for 57 minutes. I'm like, I could just be done, right? But then just to offer to say, all right, I'm just going to sit here for the next 3 minutes, and I don't need to fill it with, all right, I'll say so many Hail Marys or I'll do something in it. I'm just going to allow myself to sit and maybe I'll do something. And yeah.
Yeah. How often is the last 3 minutes of the holy hour the longest period of the holy hour? Look at my watch again. Oh, 2 minutes remain. Oh, a minute and a half are still there. We've all been in those moments. Yeah, I mean, that's a reality. It happens, and that's okay. And sometimes I enter those moments and then the Lord's going to enter in dramatically. That can happen too.
So many of the best things in my life happen in silence. And that's part of the fallen human condition, is that I know that. And yet I still struggle to give silence the proper time. And that is just the human nature that this thing has worked in the past, but it probably won't work this time. Like, but it's not going to be worth it this time. I love Garrett's point. You don't ever hear a vocation story without adoration.
Yeah.
If I'm really serious about discernment and silence isn't a part of it, I might not be that serious about discernment. And so name it, write it down, but it's got to be. You're not going to think your way through this. You're not going to name, you're not going to pros and cons your way through this. You're going to silence your way through this.
Yeah. A good buddy of mine from high school, who's a monk now, which never saw coming in high school, Levin Harton, Brother Levin Harton at Benedictine. I remember him in high school, we were just talking one time and he was saying, he marked the sign of a good friendship is, am I comfortable being silent with this person? And it just struck me, it was a very profound thought that I am, know this person well, I'm deeply comfortable enough with them that I am comfortable being silent with them. And that's kind of the goal of our friendship with the Lord, is to be in such a good friendship that I'm just comfortable being together. We don't have to fill the space. We're just together and hanging out. And that's nice.
Yeah, that's a beautiful thing.
Well, having spoken at length, maybe it's time for us to wrap up to allow others for a little bit of silence. If you're in the car, turn this off and now just be quiet with the Lord. Ignore us and go be with the Lord. You'll get better stuff anyways. So thanks for listening to About 4 O'Clock. If you have questions you'd like us to address, you can email us at wichitavocations@gmail.com. You can also visit us at our website, about4.org. Father Drew has the final word today.
From St. Joan of Arc. I am not afraid. I was born to do this.
See you next week.